And you're listening to Louisiana Considered here on WWNO and WRKF. I'm Patrick Madden. It's Wednesday, November 24th, one day before Thanksgiving. On the show today, we're going to speak with reporter Rich Webster about his latest story for WWNO, WRKF, and ProPublica about the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office. And later on in the show, a preview of this week's human horse races that will take place in New Orleans. And finally, we'll also hear from StoryCorps about Thanksgiving stories. It's all coming up here on Louisiana Considered. But first, we're talking about investigative reporter Rich Webster's latest story for WWNO, WRKF, and ProPublica, which he finds concerns from the Hispanic community in Jefferson Parish that the sheriff's department there had been accused of targeting Hispanic drivers in traffic stops and identifying them as white on tickets. And this misidentification has made it impossible to track racial bias, according to experts in the piece. Over a nearly six-year period, the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office issued more than 73,000 tickets, of which it identified only six people as Hispanic. The Hispanic community in 2020 represented 18% of the parish's total population of more than 440,000 people. So joining us now to talk about this story is Rich Webster. Rich, tell us about what you found in your latest piece.
So we had heard from people who we had interviewed in both the Black and Hispanic communities that they were being racially profiled by Jefferson Parish Sheriff's deputies. So we got 6 years worth of records from the traffic court that comprised about 73,000 traffic citations handed out. And what we found was that first, Black motorists were being cited at a rate 1.5 times their population. But the biggest thing we found was that out of those 73,000 citations, the sheriff's office claimed only six people were Hispanic, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense because Jefferson Parish population is about 440,000 and 18% of those people are Hispanic.
And Rich, what has been the response to this latest story of yours?
I mean, it's been pretty big. I mean, I think people are shocked by the numbers. another thing that we found, so the idea is that when a certain race or ethnicity, and Hispanic is an ethnicity, not a race, are undercounted, some of the experts that we spoke to, they felt that this oftentimes can be either sort of just a problem with the systems that the law enforcement agency is using, or it can be sort of a strategy to conceal racial profiling efforts. One of our experts said, you know, if everybody's white, there can't be any racial bias. And, you know, the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, they work hand in hand with ICE a lot. So this has raised a lot of questions for people in the community, especially one of the things we found was out of the top 10 most common names of white people cited, five of those names were Lopez, Gomez, Hernandez, Rodriguez, and Hernandez. So, you know, something is happening here. Unfortunately, the sheriff's office would not speak to us.
Rich, you say the sheriff's office hasn't responded. Have you heard from any other politicians or other organizations?
Yeah, so the ACLU of Louisiana, this was actually a couple of days before our story published. They sent a letter to the U.S. District Attorney, the U.S. Attorney's Office, requesting a formal pattern and practice investigation. And these investigations usually focus on law enforcement agencies with systemic, misconduct and corruption issues. And then we also spoke with Representative Royce Duplessis. And a couple of years ago, he had tried to reform some of the data collection laws in Louisiana that require law enforcement agencies to collect data during traffic stops and then send it to the state. Unfortunately, Louisiana's law has a big hole in it where if a law enforcement agency has a policy against racial profiling, they're automatically exempt from having to collect data. Royce Duplessis had been working on that. He said that the law enforcement agencies protested, and so nothing really went anywhere. Hopefully, maybe this story will spur some action.
Investigative reporter Rich Webster, thank you for joining us. And you can read Rich's latest work by going to our websites at WWNO-WRKF. You can also read it at ProPublica. This is Louisiana Considered. And Thanksgiving is, checking down at my notes, tomorrow. Can you believe it? Well, here's a fun thing happening in New Orleans. The second annual Human Horse Races will take place tomorrow, November 25th, from 12 to 4 p.m. at Easton Park. Entry is completely free. That's right, Human Horse Races. Well, host Carl Langle spoke to Ingrid Anderson, the organizer of the Human Horse Races. Here's that piece.
Oh, thank you so much, Carl, for having me.
Human Horse Races was just too good to pass by. I had not heard about this, and it's been around a couple of years. Tell us a little bit more about how this got started.
Yeah, so it's still pretty new. Actually, this year will be our second annual since the previous year because of COVID. So our inaugural event took place in 2019, although I had the idea to do this years previously. I think in 2013 is really when the idea just kind of clicked in my head.
Was this inspired by something that you saw, or came out of the blue?
No. It was from a conversation that I had with a friend.
Ah.
So I'm from here, and if you're from here or, you know, native or been here for a while, you know that on Thanksgiving Day, the place to be is at the fairgrounds, you know, get all fancy, don your finest hat and mingle with your friends and all that. So I did that for years, naturally. I'm a makeup artist and a fashion designer, so of course I love to get all dressed up and fancy. And up until about 2013, when I started befriending many people in the vegan and vegetarian scene, and I invited them to it, and a lot of them told me, no, they were morally opposed to it. They couldn't even second-handedly condone the animal use that was going on. And I totally got it. I understood. That's when the idea clicked.
It kind of came out of you wanting to do the things that you liked doing and kind of finding a new path to doing those things, because it sounds like what's most important about this is the celebration of the day and the friendships.
Exactly, yeah. So, of course, what came to mind, I wanted to produce this alternative, all-inclusive community event that people can be immersed in the experience and race with each other and have fun, all while raising money for animal rights causes.
So
this made sense.
It makes perfect sense, and the day choice is absolutely perfect also. So
right.
Tell us the details on the deets. Give us the down and dirty on when this all happens.
Yes, so every year it will always happen on Thanksgiving Day. That's the 25th this year. So the event will be 12 to 4 p.m. From 12 to 1, the band Dapper Dandies will be playing, and I encourage anyone who wants to be in the race to come in the first hour to sign up. And then at 1 o'clock, the races kick off. So there will be 8 races from 1 to 4 p.m. And last year, 2019, 2020 didn't really exist.
It was a weird year.
But the first year, people, adults and kids were racing together, and it was kind of unfair. So this year we're doing 2 kids-only races in the beginning, starting at 1, and then there will be 6 adult races.
Well, New Orleans is certainly the place to make fun happen, and Thanksgiving Day is just like any other holiday, an excuse to have a party. So thank you so much, Ingrid.
Finally, staying on the Thanksgiving theme, we're going to play a staple of public radio Thanksgiving content, StoryCorps. The gang over there has been encouraging people all over the country to record a conversation with a loved one or someone that they admire over Thanksgiving weekend. By featuring several intergenerational conversations, they're hoping to show just how easy it is to do this, whether you're across the table or across the country.
It was started in 2015 as a way to encourage people from all over the country, from all ages, to record a conversation with a loved one or someone they admire over the holiday weekend.
What's been the hardest part of the pandemic?
Is there anything you want to tell me that you've never told me before?
Can you share one of the happiest memories that you have experienced in your lifetime?
Can you tell me the story of how and why you came to America?
We'll talk more about how to participate later in the episode. But first, to help inspire you to record your own conversation, we're going to share some of the ones that we love. First, we'll hear from Max Garcia. He spoke with his grandfather, Mario Garcia, who was once a well-known child actor in Havana, Cuba. In 1962, Mario fled the Castro regime and came to the U.S. as a refugee. He had to put his acting career to the side. But he passed his passion on to his grandson. At StoryCorps, Mario told Max about the first time he ever stepped on set.
My father was a musician in Havana, and he took me to a rehearsal. And he told me to sit down at a bench outside the studio. Suddenly, someone approached me and said, "We are trying to test for this commercial." I must have been 10 years old. So I got up and I did the casting call. I mean, I have never been an actor, but it was like I had always been doing this. From the commercial, I went on to be on telenovelas and a movie and all that. I mean, that was going to be my career. But 4 years later, came a revolution and changed it.
And you had to come to Miami.
February 28th of 1962, I woke up and I knew that this was the day I would leave. My mother made me dress in a pinstripe suit and a beautifully white iron shirt and a tie. And she told me something that I never forgot. She said, "People will evaluate you based on the way you dress." So I arrived in the U.S. as a refugee looking like $1 million. But anyway, we went to the airport and there were a lot of children. We were all fighting for the window. And I remember seeing the clear waters of the water in Cuba. And it was so, so beautiful. 60 years later, you start telling that story and it all comes back. It doesn't go away.
I remember you told me that story on my 14th birthday, and it was the first time I was old enough to put it all into perspective and understand how much it took.
Absolutely. In a foreign country with no language, no parents, going to school, gone from being an actor to being a busboy. I remember that I was working and I had my 15-minute break. I would go back to an alley behind the restaurant and sit on a wooden crate and dry the tears with my apron. It was a challenge, but optimism never failed me. At 74, I've not given up on, you know, getting a good part in a movie sometime.
That sense of optimism and that dreaming big that I do have before auditions is because of you.
Tell me, what would you see yourself playing?
My favorite scenes are the final scene where they run after them at the airport and they say, "Don't leave me. Please don't leave me."
And in a perfect movie, Max, I would be the old florist who sells the bouquet that you run to the girl with. I hope that when you are my age, you will still be dreaming because the next best thing could be around the corner.
That's Mario Garcia with his grandson, Max Garcia. This next conversation was actually recorded on Thanksgiving a few years ago using the StoryCorps app, so you might hear some family dinner sounds in the background. It's a 13-year-old interviewing her grandmother. She wanted to know more about her grandfather, who died when she was really young.
No one ever told me this. Like, my mom won't tell me where did he die and, like, how did he die.
He died in my bedroom. And the night before he died, for some reason, he couldn't sleep and I didn't sleep. And we were just talking about our lives when everybody was a baby, when mommy was a baby. And we talked till 4 o'clock in the morning. And my last words to him were, "Well, you could sleep in the morning, but I got to get up. So why don't we just end this conversation and go to sleep?" And he never woke up.
Think that was fate?
I think it was fate because we shared our whole life. that night. And why would we have chosen that night to do it?
Yeah. This also isn't a question, but it just popped into my head. Why don't you want to date again? Like, do you think that he doesn't want me to or something like that?
No, I don't think Grandpa would have a problem with... I think if it was the reverse, Grandpa would be married. I know Grandpa would be married now. I've had, like, about four different people in my life that I dated for a little bit. I think what happens is you get kind of independent, and I like to do what I like to do when I like to do it without answering to anybody who I didn't share my life with. Like, anybody I'm going to meet now, I just don't really want to give my independence to somebody that I just meet on the internet or something.
That conversation is a really good example of how some StoryCorps recordings give you a chance to ask things you've always wanted to, or maybe wouldn't ask otherwise. So we know that not everybody is going to be together this Thanksgiving, either because of COVID or because not everyone lives near family. But you can still participate in the Great Thanksgiving Listen. We'll tell you how after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back. If you're not going to be with the ones you love this Thanksgiving, there are still lots of ways you can connect with your people. The next two stories you're about to hear were recorded remotely using StoryCorps Connect. First is Domini Apelles interviewing her grandpa, Florentino Apelles, back in April of this year.
What's been the hardest part of the pandemic?
The fact that I've seen a lot of people suffer. That was very hard.
Yeah, you've been to a lot of funerals.
Right.
We saw each other every week, even if we were social distance. We've always been like this. After I was born, I saw you every day.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the first time you saw me as a baby?
You look very, very, very like your mom and your Lola.
What happened on your first date with Lola?
We were on a zigzag road, you know, it's a lot of turns. I was sitting in the back and I didn't feel well, so I dropped. She actually put her hand below my mouth so I would not wet the rest of the seat. And right away, I fell in love with the look on her face.
What do you see of you in me?
I'm going to use the word resourceful. You're a jack of all trades. Dancing, singing, painting, cooking, name it, and you've got it. What do you like most about me?
You have these craziest stories, and most of them don't even exist. You taught me everything.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, Lola.
Oh, me too. Very, 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 very much.
That was Florentino Apelles and his granddaughter, Domini Apelles. Our next story comes from brother and sister, Jorge and Luz Munoz. They spent 16 years cooking hot meals for day laborers in Queens, New York. Jorge and his family aren't feeding people in their usual way right now, but they are sending food donations to families in need. They use StoryCorps Connect to talk about how they got started.
I remember one day when we were having lunch, somebody knocked on the door. Mommy get up and see who it was. She came back and they said, "That's a guy asking for something to eat. And you, Georgie, you just get up and give him your meal." You were seven.
We learned that from her. She says, "We have a home, food to eat, but some of them, they don't have nothing. So just share."
We don't have a lot of money. We sleep, all of us, in one room. Mommy, you and me. And it was hard, like having sometimes one meal, two meals a day. Then when we start working, we got a little bit lift.
I was working as a school bus driver. And one day I noticed seven guys waiting for someone to pick them up and go do any kind of job. It was raining and they have no job that day to buy food. So I tell them, "I have some food at home." And that's when the idea starts. to cook for them. What was your first reaction?
Oh, you are crazy. No, I'm kidding. I was happy because we can help you. Mom was doing the rice. I was chopping the onions and you were doing tomatoes. I mean, the kitchen was small for us, but we were together. What gives you hope or strength now?
I don't know how to answer that. I mean, I feel good. You do not need to be rich to feel what I feel. Just willing to do it. At the end of the day, when you handle a meal and you see that smile in their faces, that smile pays for everything.
That was Jorge and Luz Munoz over StoryCorps Connect. And just to show you how easy it is to use, I tried it out last year, too. I interviewed my own grandmother, Velma Hamilton. Growing up, I spent a lot of time at her house. She's lived in the same brownstone in Brooklyn for most of her life, because before it was her house, it belonged to her grandparents.
Can you tell me what your grandmother was like?
My grandmother ruled the nest, okay? She was the matriarch. All wise, all wisdom, that's how she was. I remember people all over the block call her mom or grandma because she had that mothering spirit. She had a tendency to take over your life, but it was all done in love. And you have a tendency to give it to her too, you know.
Did she do the cooking?
Oh, yeah. The house was always smelling of food.
Like a true Caribbean household.
Oh, it smelled like a true Caribbean house. You smelled coconut, stew, beef, and bacala. And you know what? It didn't matter what she was cooking. Whenever she cooked, she used to share it with the block. And my grandmother, she was always giving, always caring. That's what made her function.
You're like that too.
You know what? As I'm thinking about it, it's just what we're made for. We're made to do. If somebody needs help, how can you not help them?
I think that the most valuable thing you've taught me is how to be selfless. Like how to be generous to other people in like the way we spend our holidays together. Everyone's welcome. Anyone can come.
Well, if you get nothing else, I'm glad that you at least got that from me, that you're willing to give of yourself. I really am proud of you, you know.
Thank you. And now you get a little sneak peek into what I do for work. Yes, this is what I do all day.
Yes. And it's just right up your alley because you love to talk.
Okay.
This is definitely your gift, honey. You're operating in your gift.
As you think about who you'd like to interview over Thanksgiving weekend, ask yourself, who do I admire? If this was our last conversation, what would I want to say to them? What do I want to learn? And then record your conversation in person using the StoryCorps app or remotely using StoryCorps Connect. For more information, including our list of great questions to ask, head over to thegreatlisten.org. That's all for this episode. It was produced by Layla Oweda and edited by Jasmine Morris. Our technical director is Jarrett Floyd. This episode was fact-checked by Zanna McKay. Special thanks to Michael Garofalo, Jamaris Perez, Mia Warren, Eleanor Vasili, Abe Selby, and Sylvie Lubau. To see what music we use in the episode, go to storycore.org. For the StoryCorps podcast, I'm Camila Kashani. We'll be back with a brand new season on December 7th. But for now, happy Thanksgiving.
And that's going to wrap up our show here on Louisiana Considered. I'm Patrick Madden. You can always listen to our shows by going to our websites, WWNO, WRKF, or going to your favorite podcasting platform. Thank you for joining us and have a great Thanksgiving.